Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for words and their stories and people in America, coming up after As It Is.
Welcome to As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Mario, usually when we report on tobacco and cigarettes, we talk about the bad effects of smoking on our health.
That's right, Anna. Later in the program, you tell us how researchers are turning used cigarette filters into materials for electronics.
But first, Christopher Cruz tells us about scientists who have found a way to turn seeds from the tobacco plant into something that won't kill you. Instead, it might fuel your next vacation.
An airplane maker, an airline, and a biofuel company are working together to make fuel from tobacco plant seed oil. The companies are Boeing, South African Airways, and Sky NRG. They are using a new tobacco plant known as Solaris. The Dutch biofuel company Sky NRG developed the plant. It contains less of the drug nicotine than traditional tobacco. Julie Felgar works on environmental issues for Boeing. She said the plant also has many more seeds than traditional tobacco plants do. She said only the oil from the seeds will be used to make biofuel now. But researchers are trying to develop ways to use the entire plant to make fuel. There are two major reasons companies are developing biofuels. The first is the growing price of aviation fuel over the past 10 years. Boeing's Julie Felgar said the high prices make it difficult for airlines to operate. She said fuel represents 35 to 40% of airline operating costs. Second, airlines want to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide they release into the air. The gas is linked to rises in atmospheric temperature. The International Air Transport Association is a trade group that represents 240 airlines. It said the airline industry is responsible for 2% of global man-made carbon releases. Boeing said biofuels could reduce carbon releases from planes by 50 to 80%. The company said by 2016, it wants biofuel to meet the demand for 1% of worldwide airplane fuel. That is more than 2.2 billion liters. So tobacco will not meet much of the fuel demand. But experts believe it will help to increase the use of biofuels in the industry. Today, biofuels are used on a very small number of flights. There is criticism of biofuels. Some people argue water and land used to grow plants for fuel should grow food crops instead. Critics also fear widespread use of plants to make biofuels will cause an increase in food prices. Ms. Felgar said Boeing is working to ensure its biofuel comes from plants that are not used as food crops. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Next, we hear a story about turning trash into technology. Ana Mateo explains what that means.
If you see a person carelessly throw a cigarette to the ground, what are you likely to think? That depends. If you hate people throwing things on the ground, you might think, that person should not litter. If you are a smoker, you might think, I would sure like a cigarette right now. Most likely, though, you are not thinking, you know, that unused cigarette butt could be used to make something, something amazing. That is, unless you are a creative scientist. If you are, you may see potential, a possibility, where others simply see trash. That is just what has happened in South Korea. Kim Kil-pyo is with the Seoul National University. Mr. Kim says he saw people throwing away cigarette butts, and that got him thinking. He began wondering if something useful could be made from them. The result? Mr. Kim and other researchers found a way to turn or convert cigarette butts into the materials required for high-performance batteries. We often say, one person's trash is another person's treasure. And in this example, that is unquestionably true. Kim Kil-pyo says he and his fellow researchers looked closely at used cigarette filters. The filter is the part of the cigarette that smokers put into their mouths. Filters are made of a material called cellulose acetate. Mr. Kim explains that cellulose acetate can be made into another material, carbon. He says the pieces of cellulose acetate, known as fibers, are changed through a one-step burning process. After this, he says, they are converted or turned into an energy storage material. But why use carbon? Carbon has many qualities that seem to make it the perfect material. Carbon has a high surface area. It conducts electricity well. In other words, carbon can easily carry an electrical current. It also stays stable, unlikely to change, for a long time. And carbon does not cost a lot. All these qualities make it the most popular material for making supercapacitors. Supercapacitors are good at storing energy. They have high power mass, or density. They require only a short time for recharging. And they have a long life cycle. Supercapacitors are used in products such as laptop computers and cell phones. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our As It Is program for today. What issues interest you? Email us at learningenglish@voanews.com.
And join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
Words and Their Stories is next, followed by People in America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories. Today, we explain a very old saying that has had a big influence on rock and roll music. That saying is, "A rolling stone gathers no moss." It has several meanings. One meaning is that a person who never settles down in one place will not be successful. Another is that someone who is always moving with no roots in one place avoids responsibilities. This proverb was said to be first used in the 1500s, but in the 1960s, the expression "rolling stone" became famous in the world of rock and roll music. It became the name of a rock group, a song, and a magazine. Experts say it all started with a song by the American singer and guitarist Muddy Waters. He was one of the country's top blues musicians until his death in 1983. His music influenced singers like Elvis Presley and Bob Dylan. In 1950, Muddy Waters recorded a song called "Rolling Stone."
Well, I wish I was a catfish swimming in a deep blue sea. I would have all you good-looking women fishing, fishing after me, fishing after me. Shauna, Shauna.
A British rock group is said to have taken its name from Muddy Waters' song. The Rolling Stones performed for the first time in 1962. The group's members called themselves the world's greatest rock and roll band. In 1965, Bob Dylan released his song, "Like a Rolling Stone." It is one of his best-known and most influential works. It is an angry song about a woman who was once rich and successful, but now she is on her own, with no direction home, like a complete unknown, like a rolling stone.
You used to laugh about everybody that was hanging out. Now you don't talk so loud. Now you don't seem so proud about having to be scrounging your next
In 1967, a young man named Jan Wenner started a magazine he named Rolling Stone. The magazine reported on rock music and the popular culture that the music created. By 1971, Rolling Stone had become the leading rock music and counterculture publication. It is still popular today. This VOA Special English Program was written by Shelley Gullist. I'm Faith Lapidus. You can find more words and their stories at our website, voaspecialenglish.com.
Thank you. I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Rich Kleinfeld with the VOA Special English Program, People in America. Today, we tell the story of Todd Duncan, a concert singer and music teacher. He is the man who broke a major color barrier for black singers of classical music.
It is 1945. The place is New York City. The New York City Opera Company just finished performing the Italian opera Pagliacci. Todd Duncan is on the stage. He had just become the first African-American man to sing with this important American opera company. No one was sure how he would be received, but the people in the theater offered loud, warm approval of his performance. Duncan did not sing a part written for a black man. Instead, he played a part traditionally sung by a white man. All the other singers in the New York City Opera Company production were white. His historic performance took place 10 years before black singer Marian Anderson performed at the Metropolitan Opera in New York.
Todd Duncan opened doors for other black musicians when he appeared in Pagliacci. Until that night, black singers of classical music had almost no chance of performing in major American opera houses and theaters. Many African-American classical singers of today say they still do not have an equal chance to perform. But Todd Duncan began a major change in classical musical performance in the United States.
Todd Duncan lived a very long life. He was 95 years old when he died in March 1998 in Washington, D.C. He taught singing until the end of his life. Robert Todd Duncan was born in 1903 in the southern city of Danville, Kentucky. His mother, Nettie Cooper Duncan, was his first music teacher. As a young adult, he continued his music studies in Indianapolis, Indiana. He attended both a university and a special music college in this Middle Western city.
In 1930, he completed more musical education at Columbia University in New York City. Then he moved to Washington. For 15 years, he taught music at Howard University in Washington. African Americans had gained worldwide fame for their work in popular music, especially for creating jazz. But not many black musicians were known for writing or performing classical music. Teaching at Howard gave Duncan the chance to share his knowledge of classical European music with a mainly black student population. He taught special ways to present the music. These special ways became known as the Duncan technique. Here, Todd Duncan sings "O Tico Tico Help Me" from the opera Lost in the Stars, composed by Kurt Weill.
What have I come to hear at this crossing of paths? Must he tell a lie and live, or speak truth and die? And if this is so, what can I say to my son? O Tico, Tico, help me. Often when he was young, I have come to him and said, speak truly. Evade nothing what you have done, let it be on your head.
In addition to teaching, Duncan sang in several operas with performers who all were black. But it seemed he always would be known mainly as a concert artist. Duncan sang at least 5,000 concerts in 50 countries during 25 years as a performer. However, his life took a different turn in the middle 1930s. At that time, the famous American music writer George Gershwin was looking for someone to play a leading part in his new work, Porgy and Bess. Gershwin had heard 100 baritones attempt the part. He did not want any of them. Then the music critic of the New York Times newspaper suggested Todd Duncan.
Duncan almost decided not to try for the part, but he changed his mind. He sang a piece from an Italian opera for Gershwin. He had sung only a few minutes when Gershwin offered him the part. But Duncan was not sure that playing Porgy would be right for him. Years later, he admitted that he had no idea that George Gershwin was such a successful composer. And he thought Gershwin wrote only popular music. Duncan almost always had sung classical works by composers such as Brahms and Schumann. Todd Duncan said he would have to hear Porgy and Bess. He did. Then he accepted the part of Porgy. But he said he found it difficult to perform because Porgy has a bad leg and cannot walk. He spends most of the opera on his knees. Duncan used his special methods to get enough breath to produce beautiful sound. He was able to do this even in the difficult positions demanded by the part. Here, Todd Duncan sings Porgy's Lament from the Gershwin opera Porgy and Bess.
Duncan sang in the opening production of Porgy and Bess in 1935. Then he appeared again as Porgy in 1937 and 1942. He often commented on the fact that he was best known for a part he played for only 3 years. His fame as Porgy helped him get the part in Pagliacci with the New York City Opera Company. He also sang other parts with the opera company. Earlier, you heard him sing a song from one of the operas he enjoyed most. The part was that of Stephen Kumalo in Lost in the Stars. It was a musical version of the famous novel about Africa, Cry the Beloved Country, by Alan Paton. American writer Maxwell Anderson wrote the words for the music by German composer Kurt Weill. Listen as Todd Duncan sings the title song from Lost in the Stars.
Before Lord God made the sea and the land, He held all the stars in the palm of his hand, and they ran through his fingers like grains of sand. And one little star fell alone. Then the Lord God hunted through the wide night air for the little dark star on the wind down there. And he stated and promised he'd take special care so it wouldn't get lost again.
Todd Duncan gained fame as an opera singer and concert artist. But his greatest love in music was teaching. When he stopped teaching at Howard, he continued giving singing lessons in his Washington home until the week before his death. He taught hundreds of students over the years. Some musicians say they always can recognize students of Todd Duncan. They say the people he taught demonstrate his special methods of singing.
Donald Boothman is a singer and singing teacher from the eastern state of Massachusetts. He began studying with Todd Duncan in the 1950s. Boothman was 22 years old at the time. He was a member of the official singing group of the United States Air Force. He had studied music in college, but he studied with Duncan to improve his singing. Boothman continued weekly lessons with Duncan for 13 years. After that, he would return to Duncan each time he accepted a new musical project. He says he considered Duncan his teacher for a lifetime. Many other students say they felt that way too.
Todd Duncan was proud of his students. He was proud of his performances of classical music. And he was proud of being the first African American to break the color barrier in a major opera house. He noted in a VOA broadcast in 1990 that blacks are singing in opera houses all over America. "I am happy," he said, "that I was the first one to open the door, to let everyone know we could all do it."
Oh, Lord, I'm on my way. I'm on my way.
This special English program was written by Gerilyn Watson and produced by LaJuan Davis. I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Rich Kleinfeld. Listen again next week for another People in America program on the Voice of America.